Every day, people experience mysteries that challenge the laws of nature, like enjoying a Coke Zero Sugar. It looks, sounds, and tastes delicious. But how does one explain the great taste if there are zero calories and zero sugar? Some mysteries are just too mysterious. Coca-Cola Zero Sugar. Unbelievably delicious.
No TV binging session is complete without the unbelievably delicious zero-calorie taste of Coke Zero Sugar. Pick some up at Market Basket today.
Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shortless. The show is heard on WBCQ The Planet every Monday and Thursday evenings at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Excuse me, broadcast out of Monticello, Maine, and heard all over the world. And as I said last week, I think that patriots, conservatives, Christians, who are being silenced by the big social media outlets, and many there are many alternatives to the Facebooks and YouTubes and Twitters, etc. One of them, Parler, was recently shut down. It may come back up. But one of the alternatives, which has been around a long time, is shortwave radio. And this station, I would really encourage those who would like to get a voice, look into this station. And by the way, I'm not getting paid to plug WBCQ. The owners are true believers in free speech and would be more than happy to accommodate those who elect to get a voice. So I would encourage them, just go to WBCQ The Planet on your search engine and you come up and you can be put in touch with these folks. We do a weekly show and they actually air it twice a week, and it's a very modestly priced show. Anyway, so this show is brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp. And this year's camp will be held at the Singing Hills Christian Camp and Conference Center, July 18th to the 23rd. You can register now by visiting our website, campconstitution.net. You can also hear the show. We do upload some of the shows, most of the shows on Podomatic, also TalkShoe, and some on YouTube. We haven't done too many as of late, but we assume that YouTube will eventually remove our channel because we promote freedom and liberty, and we believe there is climate change is a farce, and we have videos about that, and we are constitutionalists, so we know that it's just a matter of time that YouTube will probably yank our 1,000 plus videos. So we're migrating over to Rumble, and we just created an account there. We have pages on MeWe, Camp Constitution, because Facebook did cancel my account after 10 years and 5,000 friends. I guess they don't like the fact that I'm exposing some of the organizations which they promote, like Black Lives Matter. But again, it has to be expected. If you're not, what's the old saying? If you're not catching flack, you're not you're not being very effective. So we are expecting to have Reverend Stevie Kraft on to talk about home churches, and he hasn't called in yet. But I'd just like to discuss our lawsuit with the city of Boston. There's been some action over the last few days. Now, let me give you some background. Back in 2017, I was invited to participate in a prayer meeting at the mayor's office, Mayor of Boston, City Hall, and Mayor Marty Walsh. Now, Walsh has recently been appointed by Joe Biden to destroy the economy. What's his title? The Department of Labor. So it will be Marty Walsh's job to ensure that the working men and women of America will lose their jobs, because that's what Biden is doing. It's almost as if Biden has declared war against the American people. The minute he got in, he was sworn in, he started passing these executive orders, et cetera. More on executive orders. But anyway, Marty Walsh had nothing to do with the prayer meeting. He's calls himself a proud Catholic, but he's probably he's definitely a humanist, a socialist, and just says that because there's still a Catholic base in Boston that thinks he might be a good Catholic boy and they'll vote for him. some of the ignorant voters that are out there. A man who supports abortion and completely embraces the homosexual agenda, totally embraces it, despises our history. You know, yesterday he might love our history, but today he has to hate it. And he recently had the statue of Abraham Lincoln. It was called the Emancipation Statue, removed because some people found it offensive. So we removed something that's been there for 140 years. Anyway, I'm digressing a little bit, but so there was a prayer meeting. It was led by a Reverend Bruce Wall, who has a, what we call an inner city ministry. And I was very encouraged by this. We weren't praying for political victories. We were praying, as the Bible tells us, pray for your leaders. We were praying for the city of Boston. And the group of prayer warriors, I guess you could call us, were made up of blacks, whites, Hispanics, Asians. That's the church. The church is diverse. It shouldn't be diverse when it comes to theology, but it was diverse ethnically, racially, and that's the kingdom of God. That's the God's church, made up of all kinds of people. So I thought, you know, this was a good event. We did some praying, we sang some hymns, a little bit of testimony, and we were there for about an hour. I said, Christians really need to step up to the plate, and that's why we're in such a mess we're in, because Christians, the Bible-believing true believers, have pretty much relegated politics to others. And, you know, the old saying that nature abhors a vacuum. Well, Satan loves a vacuum because his people come in. And when their people are in, as the Bible says, when the righteous are in, I'm not quoting the verse right, but the people rejoice. When the righteous are in power, the people rejoice. But when the unrighteous are in power, the people groan and moan. Well, they're groaning and moaning, but and for the most part, we elected these people. And yes, we know there's widespread election fraud that's been going on for a long time. And it was probably enough to make a difference in this past election, presidential election. But nevertheless, there are people that get in every 2 years, every 4 years, who should not be in there, aren't worthy of representing free people. Anyway, so after I left there, I said, you know, we need to have more of a presence. So I got a hold of the city. It wasn't right away. It was probably about a month later. I got a hold of the city and the entity that deals with the permits to raise flags. Now, the city of Boston has what I call a public access flagpole. If you look at a picture of City Hall Plaza on the outside, it's an ugly monstrosity, by the way. It's a brutalist architecture. And there's a U.S. flag, there's a Massachusetts flag, and there's a third flag. Sometimes there's also a flag of Boston. But there's a place where local organizations, private organizations, can raise their flags and have ceremonies. Now, I'm not sure how long the city has been doing this. I first became aware of the flag-raising abilities as a longtime resident of Boston. I am no longer a resident of the city, recently moved to New Hampshire. But the first time I was coming away from jury duty, and it was early October, I think it was 2010, 2009, and they were raising the Chinese Communist flag in City Hall Plaza. It was a Chinese group, Chinese Progressive Association, and it was pretty upset about that. I mean, here they are praising the Communist Revolution, and they've been doing this for a number of years, and usually there's an official from the city of Boston, whether it be the city councilor, in some capacity, and state officials that will participate in the celebration of the Communist Chinese Revolution. That's how bad things have become. Do these folks know how many people the Chinese Communists have murdered? Their own people, the oppression, and it goes on today. They must know, and they do it anyway, because they must support it. But that shows you what we are dealing with in the city of Boston. Anyway, so I went through the proper channels, and I called the nice lady, who don't know if she's still there, but she was the daughter-in-law of the former mayor, Mayor Menino, and she just asked me to send her an email with the proposed dates and, you know, what our plans are and what the flag will be. And we wanted to raise the flag to honor Boston's Christian history and the celebration of the Constitution. So it would have been sometime in mid-September, Constitution Day being September 17th, I believe. And I waited, you know, about a week or so, and I emailed her back, and she got back to me, and she said, oh, no one got back with you. Okay, well, if you don't hear from me, and by, if you don't hear from us by Monday, call this person, et cetera, et cetera. And some of the dates and facts are a little bit hazy. It's been a few years, but anyway, I would play telephone tag, and finally I get a call from her, and it was early September, and she said they denied your permit. And she said, I don't know why. She said, this is wrong. This isn't the end of it. That was pretty much her words. And I said, can I get an official letter or email stating the reason? She says, sure. So a man named Rooney, who was her boss, sent me an email, and he said it's a violation of the First Amendment, separation of church and state. And he signed it, and there was a seal in the email. The seal is the Boston, City of Boston's official seal, which has a Bible verse on it from the Old Testament, from the book of, I think it's First Kings. It's in Latin, but it's still there, and it's the Bible verse. It's also on the Boston flag, so I thought that was ironic. So I sent out an email. I sent out an email news release to the local media pointing this out, and that this is injustice going on here, because different organizations raise their flag, but the Christians cannot. Communists can raise their flag. The various homosexual groups can raise their flag. Transgender groups can raise their flag, but a Christian group cannot. So not one local media entity covered the story. Then a friend of mine suggested I get a hold of Liberty Council, which is a nonprofit legal entity based in Florida, founded by Matt Staver. And I went to their website and contacted them and put in the information. And within less than a day, they called me and they said they'd like to take the case. It's pro bono, and they said they're willing to fight the case all over the Supreme Court. Well, the first step was an injunction, or I should say, a demand letter. And they said they have 30 days to respond. That made international news, made the front page of the second largest paper in New England, Boston Herald. And some radio shows picked it up, and many other media outlets, all left and right, all over the country and other parts of the world covered it. Well, the demand letter came and gone. They simply said they have to give us a permit or they will sue the city. The lawsuit took about a year to file. Like, they filed it in July of 18, and we actually had a court date while we were at our annual camp in Pittsfield at that time, Massachusetts, about 2.5 hours from Boston. So I drove there with a couple of colleagues and friends, and the first we went to visit the federal judge. She, Denise Casper, who was an Obama appointee, and we just assumed that anybody appointed by Obama or Clinton or any of the left-wing, far-left presidents would not rule in our favor, no matter what. And we were right. So anyway, there was another case filed, and there's been a number of actions by the federal court and actions by our legal team. And just Friday, this past Friday, the First Circuit Court of Appeals ruled against us 3-0. One of them was a Reagan appointee, which, of course, that doesn't mean much because a Republican is appointed. Remember, Earl Warren was a Republican appointee, and he revolutionized the court. So just because the president who appoints the justices allegedly conservative Republicans means nothing today. It means absolutely nothing. Look at Roberts. He's really become a far leftist. He will rule against liberty all the time. So anyway, so they ruled against us, and the decision was so ridiculous. They make references to Yogi Berra and just ridiculous and insulting and childish almost. But we never expected to get justice in a federal, in a Boston area court, federal or otherwise. So now the next step is to appeal it to the Supreme Court. This is the U.S. Supreme Court. So whether or not they'll hear it, we don't know. But we do have some plans if they flatly deny us. Now, in many respects, we have already accomplished a victory. And you say, well, how is that? You know, you're not raising your flag. Well, this issue gave us international attention that lots of people around the country, especially, know that there's an entity called Camp Constitution, that we're patriots, that we stand for the right things. Indeed, Liberty Council has three criteria when they do accept the case. One of them is the case winnable? Makes sense. Second one, will this case set a precedent? And third, is the organization or individual credible? And we meet all three categories pretty soundly. But the other thing, too, is we've clearly demonstrated that the city of Boston, its political leadership, is hostile to traditional Christianity, while they openly support communism. And I'll say that again. The city of Boston is hostile to the political leadership is hostile to Christianity while supportive of communism. As I mentioned earlier, the city of Boston has no trouble issuing permits to communist groups that raise their flag, and they not only do they issue the permits, but city officials actively participate in the flag-raising ceremonies of communist countries like Cuba and China, communist China. Now, it is illegal, by the way, for a city, a town, a municipality, or county, or state, to fly a foreign flag unless there's an official dignitary. So if somebody is visiting Boston from one of these countries in some type of official, in fact, Cuba, we do not have full diplomatic relations, or maybe it's changed. I come to think of it, I think we did change. But unless there's an official from that country, here on an official, not just visiting Boston on vacation, but here in some kind of official capacity, then you could fly the flag as a ceremony with that dignitary. But other than that, you can't fly it. And the city of Boston flagrantly disregards this law. Meanwhile, they expect us to obey all of their dictates when it comes to the coronavirus. You know, wear masks, social distance, shut your business down, shut your churches down, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, anyway, we are optimistic that the Supreme Court will hear it and that we will win this case. And that, of course, if the city said they might just do away with these types of events. And I said, well, that's fine. That's what they do. That's what they do. You know, it's nothing we can do about it. That's their decision. It's almost as well, if we can't play, we're going to take our football and go home. Well, let them go home. Now, Reverend Kraft, I guess he must have had his way. I couldn't get in. Sometimes people have a little difficulty calling in. But I want to mention the house church. By the way, Camp Constitution is a Christian-based organization, but we do not endorse any particular theology or any type of denomination. We have people from various Christian denominations participate. And we do have a rule of in loco parentis, so a counselor, if a counselor is a Baptist, the young people in his or her charge leave as they came. They leave better Baptists or better Catholics or better whatever denomination they belong to. So I want to qualify that. But Camp Constitution, of course, is very receptive. Churches invite us to speak to their groups on a regular basis up until the coronavirus. But this is something that was a burden to me. The coronavirus shut down all the churches, and this was in most states, Massachusetts, where I used to live. And the church that we had attended was in meeting, and it was now on Zoom or the other conference calls. Now, when the virus first hit, we really didn't know what to expect, how widespread it would be. And so I thought, okay, this is good. You would actually see some of these services that were taking place in the particular churches, but, you know, maybe just the pastor there and one or two other people all sitting far apart from each other. There'd be a sermon, even some music, and it was on Zoom. And that went on, and after a couple of months, I was of the opinion that most, I thought that most people would say enough's enough, you know, we're going to deal with this. But most pastors, most priests, most churches just complied with the government shutdown. They were non-essential. In Boston, I should say in Massachusetts, the far-left Republican governor said that churches are not essential, liquor stores are, abortion clinics are, abortion mills where they murder babies are, but churches are not. And there have been some pastors that tried to open their churches. They got arrested. Some opened them up and never closed them. They were sort of under the, you know, under the watchful eye of Big Brother and the local Committee for the Defense of the Revolution, in other words, the Finks, and the fear of the people who are petrified. And there's a church in Worcester, Massachusetts, that was an exception. And I got a chance to meet the pastor, and I think he was formally arrested. And here he was doing everything they could. They had an air purifier. Everybody sanitized. Everyone wore masks, et cetera, et cetera. But I became convinced that they want to keep it that way, that they will never open. They will never want to see the church reopen. And there's been lawsuits, and Liberty Counsel took some up in Chicago and California, and they have had some success with these cases. But the left who run these big cities and states hate the conservative church. Now, the left-wing churches are more than happy to shut their doors. They are happy to comply with whatever the state says because they're essentially state churches. So the Unitarian churches, the left-wing Episcopal churches, they can stay shut, as far as I'm concerned. Let them stay shut. These heretical churches that fly rainbow flags, these left-wing congregational churches, let them go under, you know. That's but it's up to them to say, hey, we've had enough too. And but they're not, because they love the state, and they love they're part of the fear mongering, and they're the ones that are probably turning in people who go to these conservative Bible believing churches. So anyway, I encouraged Reverend Stevie Kraft to start a home church. Now, Reverend, I was thinking we should do this anyway, even before the virus hit. So back in early August, Reverend Kraft started a home church. And the home, we call it the Lane House, has a nice size living room. It used to be a carriage house converted to living quarters, and very comfortable. And he can accommodate comfortably 25, maybe 30 people, and probably a little uncomfortably a little more. And I think our first service was in early August with maybe 8 or 9 people. And we've had a number of people come to the service. I think Sunday, yesterday, we had, January 22nd, I think we had 18 or 19 people. That was the most we had at any one service. I would say that like many churches, they might have a membership base of 50 or 60 or 100, but only a certain percentage show up. So I would say about 60 to 70 people have at least come to a service at one point. Some of them have been coming even though they belong to other churches that have not reopened. A few of the people who have been coming go to churches that meet in public schools. They rent the property out on a Sunday, and the schools are still closed. That means the churches are closed. And some people have not been churched, who have not participated in a church, and now are getting a really good message. And I'm of the opinion that if revival is to happen, it's not going to happen in the mega churches. The mega churches where you get thousands. Now, there aren't too many so-called mega churches in New England. Most of them are small. And the few that are, there's one in Lexington, I don't think they're reopened, and you see a lot of people go there, but you see Lexington is a far left town, and if that church is vibrant, that shouldn't be the case. So there's a disconnect there, you know. But the little house church that we started is vibrant, and we hold a service, and then we have a nice, after communion, we have a nice meal. And, you know, in some churches, people can't wait to get out of there. The sermons are dry and boring, and people just can't wait to go home and watch football or whatever else they do. But our church, we get there at 10:30. It starts at 11. Sometimes we're there till 5 p.m. I mean, it's lots of great fellowship. And I think that is the beauty of a home church, that people know each other. In some of these large churches, you go, you sit down, you listen to sermons, stand up and sing a few songs, and you don't know anybody. You certainly don't know the pastor very well. And if you want an appointment to see the pastor, you've got to wait a couple of weeks. You might know one of the associate pastors, one of the assistant pastors. And that's really not the way the church was started. If you go to the book of Acts, you'll read that people met at homes. And I was talking to Rev recently. I said, you know what, I wonder if there's going to be home church organizations. So I went online and found a whole bunch of them. And it is a place. Now, we don't need to promote our home church publicly because, we're growing. It's just word of mouth. So I went on one of these home church websites to see if there are any home churches listed in Massachusetts, and there were none. And it's probably the best way to go. There could be a couple of home churches in Lexington. I doubt it. But I think that's the way to go. Now, we know home churches exist in communist countries, and they're very vibrant because, obviously, the state frowns upon Christianity, and as the state here frowns upon Christianity, we need to start home churches. And what do you need? You don't need brick and mortar. All you need is a living room or a dining room. And of course, you need a pastor or somebody who has some type of theological base. Or you could actually partner with a church. Maybe there are churches that will be visiting pastors, assistant pastors. But I always say if something is worth doing, all these obstacles can be overcome. And nothing worthwhile is easy. We're blessed with a pastor who has very sound theology. And the thing about our church is that even though we don't have a written membership, we don't have a formal membership base, we don't at this point have a doctrinal statement, Reverend Kraft, we pretty much know what our doctrine is because his sermons point out what true believers should believe, and doesn't pull his punches. And so some of the sermons are going to be uploaded to various sites, and we'll have more information about that as time goes on. And maybe we'll get Rev on sometime soon, and we'll be able to discuss it right from him. But I encourage people who are listening to this show to start a home church. Look into it. If you need to go to some of the web, I can't recommend any of the sites because I haven't really contacted any of these people that run these sites. But I would say just pray on it and just check out whatever websites they are. They give you, that looks like the ones I've looked at were pretty sound. That they'll give you some good advice, help you get started, maybe put you in touch with people who are looking to start a home church. Because let's face it, the local church, and there are some great churches out there that have beautiful church buildings that are doing the work of the Lord. That's fine. And let's encourage them. And if you belong to a type of church, by all means, don't leave it. But if not, why not consider starting a home church? Pray on it. Ask God, hey, what do you want us? And I believe that if we're going to have revival, and it's going to be through the home church. The late Sam Blumenfeld, who's a dear friend of mine, he believed that if there's going to be revival, it's going to be through the homeschool movement. And I don't necessarily disagree with his position but I would say that the homeschool-home church movement will be the catalyst for revival, much-needed revival in this wicked country that we are in today. And I say wicked. I love the United States, greatest country in the world, but we have very evil leaders. We've got an evil president. We've got a Speaker of the House who's unbridledly evil and probably not even sane. And we have a Senate majority leader who is likewise evil. They need to be prayed for, folks. We need to pray for them. Maybe they will come to have a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. But meanwhile, they are doing some evil things, and their goal is they've actually, in my opinion, they've declared war against the people of America. So we need to start home churches, and we encourage those who are listening to participate in that. Well, folks, our time is up. I want to thank you for listening to Camp Constitution Radio, heard around the world on WBCQ The Planet, and also on Podomatic, on TalkShoe, on our YouTube. And until next week, may God richly bless you.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Is that Shakespeare?
Nope, it's Geico.
Yeah, that's Shakespeare from one of his unpublished works. Oh, it be not for awakening. Nay, giveth thou the berries. For 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Nope, it's from Geico, because they help save people money.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but Geico got it from Shakespeare.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.